Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Monday, September 19th. Today, we're talking to Colorado Sun Outdoors reporter Jason Blevins about virtual fencing technology for cattle on rangeland in the American West. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1953, a swing band conducted by Dick Juergens performed the first concert at a new ballroom in the Student Center at the University of Colorado in Boulder. The hall boasted the name of the school's most famous dropout, bandleader Glenn Miller. Born in Iowa in 1904, Alton Glenn Miller took up the trombone as a teenager. It was his biggest distraction, and those close to him wondered if he'd ever amount to anything. But at CU, he met future media personality Ted Mack, who helped him make connections in the musical world. After dropping out, he slowly built a thriving career. His swing band went on to boost spirits during the Great Depression and World War II. But during a trip over the English Channel in 1944, his plane disappeared. Still, his band played on. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun invites you to attend Ski Area Bosses with outdoors reporter Jason Blevins virtually on October 6th. Hear from industry experts about lessons learned over the last few seasons, challenges about climate, housing, and much more. Visit coloradosun.com/events to register for free. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. Today, we are talking to the Colorado Sun's outdoor reporter and co-founder, Jason Blevins. Hey, Jason, welcome back.
Hey, Carol. Thanks for having me.
Totally. Let's talk about shock-collared cows helping to repair and conserve some of BLM rangeland. Tell us about it.
Yes, in the Bureau of Land Management's Upper Colorado River District, wildlife conservationists and rangeland conservationists are working together to virtually fence these allotments of grazing permits that they allow for ranchers who want to run cattle on public land. Truly a transformative type of technology. They erect these antennas on mountaintops and mesas in the district. This is a district that, say, spans both Eagle and Garfield counties, bumps into Pickens County. And from these antennas, they're able to establish these sort of virtual fences that are not unlike the electric shock collars that we use for dogs. Ranchers will train their cattle. It takes a couple few weeks to train a herd to kind of recognize the tone that the collars will emit as they near a border. And then that will eventually get to maybe a buzzing, and then it eventually becomes a shock, and cattle become a use to that, and they're able to sort of corral and move cattle across public lands and rangelands without fencing. The implications here are manifold and diverse. Ranchers love the idea of being able to locate all their livestock with the swipe of their phone, find out where every animal is, make sure that everybody's together. Rangeland conservationists are able to move cattle through meadows and pastures in a way that can adapt to a single storm, to the way they want to conserve or repair sagebrush habitats. They're combining it with all sorts of other measures like sagebrush mowing that stimulates new growth, and that new growth is able to repair a pasture and rangeland. So it's really just a multi-dimensional improvements to how public land managers and ranchers are able to kind of work the public rangeland. They say it's just huge for rangeland conservation and rangeland repair, as well as just the ranching business on public lands.
Well, right. And it makes me think about, if you go back to the American West in the late 1800s, when there was range wars between cattle ranchers and sheep ranchers. And a lot of those range wars were over fencing being put up. Does this mean that some fencing is going to come down eventually if we can do cattle this way?
Yes. Ideally, this type of technology could replace barbed wire, which is pretty amazing if you think about it. Think about the role barbed wire has played in the American West in the past century or plus. There's really divided the entire West. There's divided with barbed wire. The idea that you can move these cattle and, you know, eventually maybe even sheep. They do use this technology on sheep in Australia and New Zealand. So it's entirely possible this could happen with sheep as well. Brand new program, but they're hoping it could conceivably, yes, lead to pulling down fences, which thrill wildlife managers who can think of all the ways that, you know, now wildlife might be able to more freely move across public lands, whereas they were maybe hemmed in a little bit with barbed wire fencing.
Right. And they'd get snagged in it. I think about horses getting snagged in barbed wire and wildlife. Jason, where's funding for this come from?
It's pretty diverse right now. There's some funding from the National Resource Conservation Service, some funding from different departments of the BLM, rangeland, you know, divisions, as well as wildlife divisions. Those two divisions don't necessarily work together, but they are for this project. Then the Forest Service is looking at this as well as Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Funding this initial technology. It's a pilot program up there. They have about 10 of these towers put up right now. The towers cost about $10,000 to erect. And then the cost of the sort of a monthly cost of using this collar technology with a company called Vents with a V costs about $50 a month for, or $50 a season for a collar. Ranchers are carrying a bit of that cost. And they started with about 135 cows and one permittee, and they're up to more than 2,000 cows. And they have the 10 towers they have in Eagle and Garfield County now span, can provide virtual fencing to 500,000 acres in the upper Colorado River District, which is a lot. Towers can stretch for 20 miles of range. Pretty fascinating technology. And there's just a real buzz of excitement. It's only been around for a couple of years, and the buzz around these things is, you know, the possibilities are enormous for wildlife, for grazing, for recreation. So the implications are truly huge.
It is. It's life-changing in the landscape of the American West, really. And these towers that you're referencing, are they essentially like cell phone towers? Will we be able to see them when we're out recreating in the hills?
They're very similar to, but they're not quite as big. You know, the cell phone towers have bigger footprints. These are pretty small little footprints. They can be delivered with a UHV. They're painted camo and they're put up in kind of discrete spots, but still need line of sight. So they are high, but they're pretty small, easily fit in the back of a side-by-side.
Got it. And you mentioned that this technology is in use in Australia with sheep. Is there a sense that it's taken a long time for it to get here? Or, you know, are we kind of on the cutting edge of this technology in the U.S. also?
We're pretty much on the cutting edge. You know, obviously the technological improvements in this kind of cellular technology is huge with the advent of 5G. I think that's been sort of the gateway that's really opened this technology to more uses. This program in Colorado is about 2 years old. And, you know, if the Forest Service jumps on, they have even more acres under grazing permits. So that possibility of that sort of expanding into another agency would really turbocharge this technology and spread it even more. But the early responses for the first 2 years in the Upper Colorado River District of BLM is really huge. They are seeing ranchers lining up. The ranchers are hearing about it from other ranchers and they're saying, oh my gosh, I want to be a part of this. And this is huge. So, you know, it could conceivably just move through the market and not even need the participation of these federal land managers, but the federal land managers are kickstarting this technology in the U.S. and the American West right now.
Yeah, well, I really loved reading the story. And thanks for, you know, fleshing it out with us on the podcast today. You know, I first read the story last Thursday in your Outsider newsletter that you curate and send to premium subscribers every Thursday. So if folks want to get a first read on Jason's outdoor coverage, hop over to coloradosun.com and subscribe to The Outsider. And you also can go ahead and read the story on our website a few days after. So thanks, Jason. Thanks to everybody who helped produce today's podcast and to our production partners, Pirate Audio. I hope you have a great day and that you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. A Colorado rancher has spent $11 million of his personal fortune on an ad campaign meant to sour voters on Governor Jared Polis, becoming one of the state GOP's biggest donors in the process. Steve Wells became wealthy through oil and gas development on his 40,000-acre spread in Weld County on the Eastern Plains. He said he's upset with rising crime, government overreach in schools, and energy regulations, among other issues, and he blames Colorado's Democratic governor for all of it. The spending comes as Polis is favored to win re-election in his race against Republican challenger Heidi Ganahl. Republican insiders say Wells' money would be better spent on races that appear more winnable. A new assessment found that Colorado has fallen behind key benchmarks in its goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 2025. The state fell furthest behind in transportation, where state estimates put 2025 carbon dioxide emissions unchanged from current levels if stronger new policies are not added. The report led clean air advocates to renew calls for more spending on public transit and for action to curb consumer and business driving. State officials say Colorado needs to cut 10 million tons of carbon emissions from transportation each year to meet its goal for 2025. Two Colorado voters filed a residency challenge Friday against State Representative Kyle Mulica, claiming he's not living in the state Senate district he's running to represent. The complaint is being coordinated by a lawyer who works on conservative political causes, and it highlights a trend of residency challenges targeting political candidates across the state. Mulica is the third sitting state senator or Senate candidate whose residency has been questioned in recent months after legislative district lines were redrawn last year as part of Colorado's once-a-decade redistricting process. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.